Hi there. Before we start, if you're new to our show, thank you so much for tuning into our program and we hope you'll stay with us for a very long time. And if you're a regular listener, thank you so much for your continued support throughout this period of uncertainty. We're really grateful for all your kind words and encouragement. You really help this podcast to gain a great exposure as our mission is to center the perspective of the people who look like us and as women and people who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Omni, Apple and Google or Spotify. Leave us a rating and a review. And if you'd like to support us, please head to Buy Me Coffee page to make a donation, which will help us to continue the intersectionality of the podcast industry.
Did you take your iron tablet?
Every day, they don't make a fucking difference.
Yeah, I think it's a bit irritating. I wonder if we have some sort of, I get that feeling as well. I wonder if we have that chronic fatigue syndrome.
I wonder how
you can get that checked out.
I've thought about that.
Yeah.
It's just I wore a tingle. I've heard of people who actually have it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And mine is not that bad. So that's why I've never thought to go get it checked out because it's not like that bad. Hey guys, it's Jesse.
Hi, this is Helen.
And we're Asian Bitches Down Under in the middle of January and the last final days of the lunar calendar. Lunar New Year, I suppose. Helen, how are you feeling?
Yeah. I'm still recovering from my cold. Yeah, but I'm feeling quite all right because I just went to a climb this morning.
Oh, lovely.
And the weather is not very nice today here up on the coast.
Yeah, it was like it was like so humid and hot yesterday. I visited Kapamata with some family members, which was absolutely delightful. Love Kapamata to death, honestly.
Really doing this time just before the Lunar New Year, isn't it?
Oh, it's so festive. It's just brilliant. I just love how everything's so cheap. And I'm with my people, you know, Asians. just kidding. My people are, who are my people? I have no people. But anyway, you know, I only say I'm with my people just because, you know, I don't know about you, Helen, but Kapamata is such a safe space for me, not just because maybe there's a lot of Asians around, but I think perhaps it's just because I only have really fond, comforting memories associated with that suburb because, you know, when I was growing up at least, I was taken there by my parents a lot on the weekends and sometimes during the holidays and just, you know, always the same stuff. We'd buy groceries and fruits and, you know, sugar cane juice, which I still have some in front of me here.
Yeah, I think Vietnamese communities is so important to across Asians in Australia.
Absolutely.
That's the community that we used to go to when we first arrived in Melbourne as well. Now you're
interesting.
Used to take me to on the train in Melbourne when we first arrived to Flemington.
Yes.
And I remember quite vividly, I think that's the kind of day that she was the happiest.
Yeah, yeah.
That she can get to go to a place that where she can get the sort of vegetables she couldn't get from Safeway.
Mm.
And just like you said, amongst, you know,
the other Asians. Just people.
And eat a bowl of hot food.
So, yeah. hanging around people who, what's really strange is a lot of the people I encountered yesterday in Kapamata, they could speak Mandarin.
Oh, okay.
I forgot about that. But we purchased a couple of stuff, you know, Lunar New Year gifts. I have gifts coming up and stuff for people's birthdays. And all the shop owners were like really kind. Mm. And like when I was talking to my mother, I mean, Mandarin, they would then interject and respond in Mandarin as well. And I'm like,
so typical of Asians.
Yeah, they're just so brilliant. They just know how to, they like a lot of me and these people they know Mandarin, which I was just like, oh, so impressed. I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of history involving
Oh yeah,
that which
there's a lot
I'm
of Chinese that move to Vietnam and then overseas again.
So a big bowl of, well, actually I had Hainan chicken yesterday. I didn't have fur because it was too hot. It was literally like 35 degrees in Parramatta, and then today in Sydney it feels like 21, which I think it is.
It's very cold. Yeah, and very chill.
Well, let's jump into our cultural consumption of the week. Helen, do you want to kick us off?
Okay, so I'll kind of continue with my culture consumption during my Christmas and New Year's break, which I didn't have enough time to share last week. One of the films that I want to share with everyone is Darjeeling Limited, which is directed by Wes Anderson. For some reason, I'm kind of, I don't want to say that I'm obsessed with his work, but it's undeniable that his works are really like sort of quirky
Yeah,
that
they are. Yeah.
would kind of attract you to continue to watch it.
Right,
Yeah.
okay.
And he's always have the same group of cast.
Yeah.
I mean,
Owen
if I
Wilson.
noticed, yeah, Owen Wilson and Bill
Ben
Murray.
Stiller is a Ben Stiller also is a favorite.
So Darjeeling Limited, starring Owen Wilson, Adrien Brody, and it's the dark humor drama about three brothers trying to kind of restore their family relationship through a train trip in India.
Exoticization, anyone?
Yes, it's so funny. So Owen Wilson's character is Francis, obviously the oldest of the three, who is a kind of the mild control freak. He can like he plans everything and calling a spiritual journey in India, obviously for white people. So their trip took a very drastic turn when they experienced death with the local people, and watching the rituals of the local people had enlightened themselves and restored the bitterness of the sibling relationship. I think sometimes some people might think that Wes Anderson's work is a little cultural appropriated, which I think sometimes it does. Apart from Darjeeling Limited, there's Isle of Dogs, which is a story based in Japan. It's an animated movie, and I think the latest one is French Dispatch, which is another film we watched during the holidays. But personally, I think Anderson does a fair job in presenting like non-English cultures, even so that maybe some people might feel like he is exoticizing or fetishizing those cultures.
I think I've seen parts of this movie. Is Rachel Weisz in this movie?
No, she's not. Angelica Houston is. She
I
appears.
might be thinking of another movie where Rachel Weisz is in the movie as like a romantic interest.
But I thought this was a really fun movie to watch, because Wes Anderson always incorporate really wacky styles of horrifically, and close-up shots of very strange stuff, very funny dialogues.
I have to say, I'm not the greatest fan of Wes Anderson's films. I feel like I think the first Wes Anderson movie I ever saw was Moonrise Kingdom in 2012. And I kind of, because it's, I sort of, I feel like his cutesy quirkiness is so, like, it insists on itself in the sense that it insists on its quirkiness. Sometimes to the detriment of just like the movie's kind of storyline. Like I feel like he sometimes portray like the way he makes a movie and the style of it is so like it insists on itself. It's like a style that insists on itself in a way that I just like I'm like I get it. You're it's kind of like you know when in high school or at uni there was always that quirky somewhat attractive man or woman who had like really quirky sun glasses and like a really cool tote bag or something. And you observe them from afar and you're always like, you're really quirky and I'd like to get to know you. And then, you know, during the last weeks of semester, you do finally have a conversation with them and they're like very vapid. That's kind of like what I feel with Wes Anderson. Like it's sometimes I feel like to him, the aesthetic is more important than the content on the movie.
Oh, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah,
Yeah,
that as
and then
well.
like honestly, and then I saw the Grand Budapest Hotel, which I believe I didn't mind as much. Like I didn't mind that. I like Ralph Fiennes in that role. I think he's in there. And then like I think a few years ago, my interest in him in Wes Anderson sort of diminished even more after like during the pandemic, the French Dispatch, the trailer for it was showing everywhere for years and years. It felt like it never came out. It was so weird. I don't know. But yeah, and then like even the way his trailers are made are very very distinct in his own style. And yeah. Have you seen that Dog Island one?
I've seen the Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, do you like that one? Apparently that's not bad.
That's not bad because I think it took into a field that is very rarely used. The style of animation is very rarely, it's not sort of those cutesy, neither I can't even explain what sort of animation style it is. It's not the Japanese Asian sort of manga style, and it's not like American comic style animation either. So it's a very strange, but the story was really good, obviously, because I love dogs myself. It's a story about how a young boy is in search of his dog and end up antagonizing the whole government. And I really love that. But in the back of mind, I still think in that movie, The Isles of Dogs has a little bit sense of exoticizing Japan.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, watching it from the point of view of an Asian, that's my personal opinion. But what do you say about French Dispatch? I had the same feeling as well. If you like between Darjeeling Limited and French Dispatch, which are the two movies I watched over the holidays, I didn't like French Dispatch that much.
Interesting.
Even though they had a huge, brilliant cast, you know,
Oh,
they
yeah.
Frances McDormand is
Timothée Chalamet,
Timothée
Saoirse
Chalamet.
Ronan,
And what there's that French woman, I can't. I have
Blair Sado. I love her.
I have her face and her body in my mind, but I couldn't care. I can't remember her name.
Leah Sado.
I think so.
Or is it Marion Cotillard?
Definitely.
Probably Leah Sado. I remember
Marion.
Leah Sado in the trailer as like a cop.
She's a pretty good
She's
star.
a Bond girl as well.
The Bond woman, But yeah, French Dispatch.
I didn't see the French Dispatch and I had no interest in it just because I like
Wasn't
the
that
trailer drummed it into me that I was just like, I can't stand any more Timothée Chalamet. Ugh.
the French Dispatch dragged a little bit. It wasn't interesting at all. But whereas Darjeeling Limited, it's on the move all the time. There's always new things coming up, even so that there's the, you know, the stern expression of Owen Wilson that always makes you laugh.
I have a lot of time for Owen Wilson. I really like him. One of my favorite movies is actually Midnight in Paris.
Oh yes,
I
I
mean,
love that as well.
I don't want to comment about Woody Allen. We don't need to go there right now, but I really love Midnight in Paris. It's so beautiful. It's literary in a way that is not like saccharine, like it's upbeat. Oh, yeah, Midnight in Paris and the music. I love Midnight in Paris. And Léa Seydoux is in Midnight in Paris, Yeah, and I guess we're jumping from one straight male. Actually, I don't know with Wes Anderson straight, but anyway, let's just say one male, white male from another auteur, filmmaker is Damien Chazelle. I was, along with my partner, lucky enough to be invited to the Australian premiere this week in Sydney. I was very excited. It was a Monday night, so I wasn't excited about that. Like, who wants to go out on a Monday night?
And end up
Nobody.
with so many people at
I mean, I didn't really mind the number of people, but because like I've never been to a movie premiere, and this was quite a big deal because Margot Robbie would be there, and I was lucky enough to see her about 50 meters away, kind of like taking selfies with with fans who were like crowded outside of Market Street. So this premiere took place in the State Theatre, and when we went, eventually got inside. I mean, it was first of all just nice to dress up. I never dress up. I hate dressing up, only in that because I'm very lazy. I'm just very 很懒惰. I'm very, very lazy. But you know, I got a new black slip dress, which I was very excited about wearing. So I did that, and the setting of the premiere, the State Theatre, was very apt because a lot of the decor inside kind of matched the decor of the movie. Which you know, I mean, I'm not even going to explain what it is about because I know everyone who's listening,
Well,
you know, has
probably,
seen the
yeah,
posters.
the posters, the trailer,
Oh, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And it kind of, I get it why it's kind of everywhere because unfortunately the movie's not that good. It's too long. It's too long. It's
long
over
is it?
three hours, so it's 3 hours and nine minutes.
Oh
It doesn't, I have to say, it doesn't feel like 3 hours. Like you're never looking at the watch, but it's a film that kind of bludgeons you across the head with its excess. There's a lot of naked bodies. There's a lot of sort of sexual orgy scenes. There's a lot of like crazy bang, 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 bang. And I guess I wasn't too disappointed only because like I kind of, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Margot Robbie. I'm like, yeah, I respect her. You know, I don't go gaga crazy over her. Brad Pitt, I have no time for. As in like I just I'm like shrug, yeah. So what? And then like and then there are like other cast members like Jean Smart is in there. There's like up and coming great POC actors, one who plays a black trumpeter. So and then one, another one who Lee Jun Lee, whose character is based on Anna-May Wong, who you know
Oh,
Helen, you and I have
we
talked
talked
about on this
about,
podcast, the marginalized Hollywood silent film star era actor. And she was great. I think she was definitely the strongest character in the movie.
Nice.
But I wasn't, yeah, I wasn't going in thinking this is going to be as good as La La Land because just like La La Land is one of my favorite movies. It left me feeling so inspired about making art in a way that only few things have made me feel, you know. So, but unfortunately, yeah, the music is not as good. It's a bit too all over the place, and I'm very grateful that I had a chance to write a review for it, which will come out in Women's Agenda tomorrow,
Nice.
which are, you know, Helen, I'll send to you, and we'll post in the show notes as well eventually. I had a really good time coming home and reading the Metacritic reviews that slammed the movie like very, very harshly. Yeah,
Wow.
it got like 63% on Metacritic, I think, something very low. A lot of people didn't like it.
What do you think is the problem?
Reason?
Yeah, I don't
Oh,
want to, I shouldn't use the word problem,
yeah,
but
I
yeah,
think the
what's the
reason
reason?
is there was no like the writing wasn't very strong. There was no like we had four to six very we sort of follow the story of you know these three, four, five, six people. In during the last days of the silent film era to the beginning of like the talkies, like when sound came into film.
Comes into it, yeah.
And you know, there's a great cast. There's Margot Robbie, there's Brad Pitt, there's Jean Smart. But their characters and the way they were written were just like so vapid. Like they had no real depth to them.
Yeah, there's no
And
content.
yeah, and the sort of tenor of the film is just so excessive. Like it bashes you across the head with loud music and quick shots, and you're just like you're just spending the whole time thinking, what, huh? Like you feel like you can never ground it while watching the movie, really. Yeah, and then like yeah, I think that's mainly people's a lot of people critics are I have so much fun reading the reviews. Time magazine's critic Stephanie someone or other, something starting with Z, she was like, this film, Damien Chazelle had intended the film to be about like a homage to Hollywood and cinema making. So like you mentioned to me beforehand, recently we've seen a lot of movies that are about filmmaking. So like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Empire of the Light, The
Absolutely.
Fablemans, yeah, a
Yeah.
lot of films about filmmaking and kind of, I think it's a product of the sort of the post-pandemic fatigue, like fear,
I
the
see.
Hollywood industry fearing that nobody will, you know, watch films
Watch
again.
films
I
again.
mean, we have this concern every few years. It never really goes away. But also, I think like it's a legitimate fear. I get it. But people will always go to the cinemas, I reckon. This is just my personal opinion. But the Time magazine critic was like saying he didn't like this isn't a love letter to Hollywood. It's like Damien Chazelle condescending to Hollywood because just the way he talks tells a story. Yeah, a lot of critics were unimpressed.
I see. I haven't seen the film yet. I'll
I'd love to
probably
see.
see it when starting to stream
Yeah.
somewhere.
Yep.
But it does sound like with the, with how you describe it, it does sounds like it's a movie that you need to see it at the cinema with all those visual
I've,
and
yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, it was just a bit too much. Like there's a long party scene. They're like if the actors were not partying, they were like snorting coke in some small
Yeah, that's what's been portrayed in the trailer.
Yeah,
That's
there's a lot
my
of kind
fear
of
that.
snorting, drinking, fucking, like, yeah, it's just like it feels like it's a movie that was loud for the sake of being loud without any kind of depth. That's how I felt. Yeah.
Yeah, I
But
see.
I'll be keen to hear what you think when you eventually watch it.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
From one loud movie to something a bit slow
Oh, nice.
and maybe a little bit more tender. So the last few days, I started rewatching a Japanese short. Then it's not short, but the episodes are short. Japanese series called Midnight Diner. I started watching with my daughter without remembering that it has adult content.
Yeah, what kind of adult content?
It's got narratives surrounding the adult videos industries, strippers and adult video male performers. Anyway, so this is a drama that's set in this little tiny diner in the red light district somewhere. I assume it's in Tokyo. It has a very warm and poignant atmosphere. The master, what everyone calls him, he's the owner of the diner. He will serve you food with ingredients that he has in his kitchen, or you can also provide him the ingredients and then he could cook it for you. So the regular reg sorry the regular patrons of the diners are mostly like social misfits. Each episode depicts their individual the patrons, their personal relationships or social issues. Like I said, some with adult content, and I skipped that part when I was watching with my daughter. Without, we were like, "Oops, I forgot that this episode is this." So we just like cover her eyes and ask, "Do you want us to skip it?" And she said, "Oh, okay, let's skip it." But she loves watching the food being prepared, being cooked. It's just a lot of genuine portrayal of people's relationship. There's characters of the Yakuza, strippers, drag queens. It's certainly not loud. It's a very kind of a slow moving pace where I think Japanese cinema or television does the best because their narratives of their feelings is flow through that kind of slowness between each other. Yeah, and it's just the stories about people who have been kind of ostracized by the society. Yeah, and I think so far my daughter really enjoyed watching it. Yeah, a lot of dark humor in it as
Yeah,
well.
that's great. And sorry that you're exposing your daughter to like, content from other countries other than America.
Yeah, I think that she enjoys it as well. She found it fun to try to stay watching it because there's always like a mystery behind the story of an individual person, like, oh, why does he behave like that now? Why is he so angry? And you slowly opens up like a Pandora's box and looking into his past or her past life. And I think that's kind of like a story building. There's more content in it. So that's why she likes to watch it. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a break. And when we come back, I just want to give a shout out to a couple of Asian Australians who we were lucky enough, we are the lucky one. We got onto the list of the Asian Australia Alliance 2022 list. So I'll pick a couple of people from that list, and that's what we'll be talking about when we come back.
Amazing. We'll be right back. And we're back, Helen. What is this list you mentioned before?
Okay, so Asian Australian Alliance. But anyway, so there's a website called beingasianaustralian.net. It's a place where you have a compiled resources for Asian Australians. There's a news platform for Asian Australians as well. And last year we were approached by them, and you know, kind of asking everyone to nominate the Asian Australians that are on the media, or not only in media, I think in other industries as well, who are active in promoting our identity and our stories. And obviously, of course, we didn't nominate ourselves, we were nominating other people, and other groups of Asian Australians. But when I found out at the beginning of the year we were nominated as well, I was kind of shocked, because I always thought that we're such a small, you know, a small podcast that not a lot of people listen to. So I was kind of surprised and happy about it.
Yeah, it was very, very flattering.
Yeah, it's very flattering. And anyway, so I looked through the list. There's actually a couple of people that I didn't think that Jessica Malboy was Asian. I didn't know that her father is Indonesian. I always thought that she's First Nation people.
Right.
Her dad, so she's like a half. She's her dad's Indonesian. And I was happy to see Annette Shewan, who has an extensive career in Australia, we all know, in screens and performance industry, particularly television and film and theatre. I think she's currently a freelance writer at the moment. And since 2013, she's an executive producer for contemporary Asian Australian performance at Carriage Works, which is in Sydney. One of the person who is on the list surprised me as well. Not in the way that he shouldn't be on the list, but in the way that I feel kind of ashamed that I don't know him.
Oh yeah, tell us about him.
This is James Wun Zhiren. I think that's his Chinese name. Yeah, who is an Australian director, producer, screenwriter, and comic book writer. He has primarily worked in horror genre as a co-creator of the Saw and Insidious franchise, and the creator of the Conjuring universe.
Wow. I'm like,
why I didn't know about this before?
Yeah.
Because I only saw what Anglo names in those productions.
Yeah, exactly.
His name probably wasn't, you know, in the spotlight. And the latermost, which is a Conjuring universe, the highest grossing horror franchise at over $2 billion. He's also the founder of the film and television production company Atomic Monster Production. Yeah, so it really surprised me that I didn't know about him at all, which is kind of like Asian shame for me.
But that's okay. I mean, you, like you said before, you're not across the whole horror genre that much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and his latest work, if you've seen the, I think it's on everywhere as well, like on the buses, in the bus, in cities. It's called Megan.
It's the doll,
the real life
little girl.
Yeah, doll horror film.
Yeah. Billy and I have been talking about wanting to go see it.
Oh yeah.
And okay. Obviously, I'm not going to go with him because I don't like horror.
Yeah,
I think the only time I went to see a horror film with him, I spent the whole film just watching his face.
Covering my face.
Not looking at the screen. And just watching his face. Just like this. And then he'll be like, You just,
What are you doing?
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so James Wan is one of the producers for this film, and it seems like he's got this appeal towards the puppets. Even his Instagram account name is Creepy Puppets. I guess everyone has this sort of fetishization of horror. Like for me personally, my family knows that I'm really into zombies. Like I love
Oh, okay.
watching zombie movies or television series that have zombies. But apart from Walking Dead, I haven't seen that one yet. So Megan, the movie reminds me of Kazuo Ishiguro's Clara and the Sun.
Yeah.
It's
Oh,
about the AI doll that is
Yes.
purchased to replace like a lost daughter or
Yes.
sibling.
But in Clara and the Sun, they don't go and murder people,
Yeah,
right?
it's not about horror, yeah, but it's a very bleak and desolate response to the family tragedy, the novel. But
You know, I still have to read that, Helen. I haven't read it yet.
I think it's a book that you could finish over a weekend. Yeah, it's a very easy and yeah, but his writing is not hard to read, but at the same
Good,
time,
good.
it's really sad.
Oh,
It's a bit morbid, I think.
okay.
So James Wan is the main person I really want to mention it, and we are so happy that we are on the list with the
Oh,
rest,
yeah.
with all
Yeah,
the
we're
Asian
very,
rebellions.
very flattered.
Okay, so should we
Let's
move
move
on
on to,
to
yes, the debate. So every year there's kind of like in a, I still have to catch myself up on this because and obviously we're talking about the Lunar New Year, the Year of the Rabbit. Short, if you see, rabbits around Sydney or wherever city you are in, LNY is now the kind of politically correct way of saying it. But like, I still have to catch myself because sometimes I say Chinese New Year, just like automatically, because like we grew up with just saying that, just off like that. But Lunar New Year, it's now what you should say because, not only Chinese people celebrate this calendar.
So
But
Vietnamese,
yeah.
Koreans, Malaysians, people with Chinese background but who are not Chinese
Yeah,
anymore.
Indonesians.
People across Asia celebrate this Lunar New Year. It's become more inclusive, I think.
I remember when I was in primary school, I think year three, our ESL teacher, the legendary Mrs.
There's a wood
Woodhead,
head.
Tina Woodhead, she would like during Chinese, sorry, I did it. During Lunar New Year, we would dress up as like we would go in the dragon costume and we'd have a whole
Oh,
dragon thing. Yeah, Carlingford Webb's public school had a lot of Asians,
yes,
so it was
has a
like,
lot of age.
yeah, so it was thick in part of the culture, and I kind of look back and I'm very grateful for that, right?
I mean,
That this white older woman would like would know to give us an avenue of celebrating, our culture without ever fetishizing us. Like I don't feel like she ever othered us in any way at all.
She didn't. She kind of guided us through and tried to, and she's there, she's keen to learn as well. I think she's keen to listen to the students' experience and the students' stories, our personal stories as well. So I think there's still a lot of people who debate over whether or not it is appropriate to say Lunar New Year or Chinese New Year or some. Lately, I've seen Instagram that some people are debating over that. Oh, it came from China, so you're supposed to still call it Chinese New Year. Personally, I don't think so because everyone celebrates it now. Lunar New Year, it's the movement of the moon. It's not really. It's everyone sees the moon. The moon doesn't. It's not a property of China, so. Yes, you can call it you should be able to call it Lunar New Year. And I want to move on to the horoscopes of the year of rabbits for us because you're the rabbit, Jess.
It
This
is
is
my
your
year.
yeah, this
It
is
is my
your
year, the rabbit, which is why Helen has that rabbit on her face.
I looked up the horoscopes for the Chinese zodiac, the animal zodiacs for this year. Funny enough, that English version seems to be all positive for the Chinese version, the Hong Kong website, which is written by, I think, by this fortune teller in Hong Kong, is kind of depressive for some reason. I think they go into more details, very technical details, that which I have no idea how to translate it. So apparently, for the people who are rabbits, it's a year that is Chong Tai Sui. I think
What does
it
that mean?
like offending. It's something bad will happen to people with the rabbit zodiac. It says that this year, for people who are turning 36 and 49, you'll have to be aware of your emotional issues. Remind yourself to be more positive. There is a health problem that could be come up anytime, so just be careful about it. Yeah, and even for me as well, it seems a bit depressive as well for a rooster.
What is
Is
that?
that there's a lot of changes with my career, my relationship, and my health.
That's a bit alarming.
Yeah, I know. It sounds so depressive, especially in the lunar year of February and August. I'm assuming that's like March and September. Watch out for vehicle accidents. Try to drive safer in those weeks
Oh
too.
my God.
So funny.
This is terrible.
Yeah, but in another, introspective, that the English one, there's actually a website called ChineseZodiac.org. They say that let me see, what's the year of rabbits for rabbit zodiac? Oh, it says that it's time to tap into this energy to make most of it. To start, for people of rabbits, focus on building strong connections with loved ones, colleagues, and anyone else in their lives. After all, rabbit is known for its ability to create and maintain harmonious relationship. And as for careers, 2013 is the perfect time to focus on professional development and advancement. So that's the advice for you, Jess. Take advantage of networking opportunities. Build relationship with colleagues and even consider taking on new projects or additional responsibilities. But you're already busy enough, aren't you?
Well, also, I don't believe in any of these.
Yeah, it's something very trivial, but it's fun to, once in a while.
Everyone born in 1987 will
Yeah,
go through a terrible time this year.
thank
A
God.
lot of people. And everyone else will not go through a terrible time.
Yeah, something else about Lunar New Year, which we touched on last year's as well, is the capitalism of Lunar New Year.
It seems like every year around this time, Helen starts spamming our whole family chat about all the things that she's seeing, and it's like, Helen, yes, it's just getting worse every year.
It's
Actually,
getting hot.
I see that Tory Burch has a collection of rabbit kind of new design with rabbits on it,
Oh,
thousands of dollar sweaters that
okay.
don't look too trashy. Like often when designers, just kind of capitalize on the Chinese New Year festive animal, it's like, it's the stuff I've seen in the past, like the giant tiger on the handbag with Louis Vuitton or
Oh
something.
yeah. We talked
It's like,
about last
who would buy
year.
that?
It's
So
really
gross.
ugly. Yeah. So apart from luxury brands, this year, for me, I really took the observation towards the food, especially on chocolate.
Much more
Yeah,
exciting topic than
chocolate seems
fashion.
to be on the rise of capitalizing on Lunar New Year, especially European brands had already jumped onto the bandwagon and marketed specific Lunar New Year gift boxes, like or range or Lunar New Year range to attract Asian markets. I've seen Godiva, which is they've just entered Australian market. I believe late last year,
How
like
exciting.
they opened a store in Chatswood. Yeah,
We need to go to Chatswood,
a very
We need to go
Asian central place.
We need to go to Chatswood for that, right? And because, you know, they're all over America, and I every time I go to America, I love eating Godiva chocolates. But also Chatswood for the video game slash
Video
restaurant.
game. Game.
There's like an ES, it's called
Yeah.
ESC gaming restaurant. It's like
Escape.
Japanese food where you can eat like sushi and sashimi while like gaming your way
Yeah.
through an evening.
Playing the arcade
Oh
game.
my God, it is so good. We have to go. Shout out to ESC gaming in Chatswood.
Okay, so coming back to our discussion. So Godiva, Haig, which is an Australian brand,
Oh yeah, what has Haig done?
Haig has been doing like Lunar New Year gift boxes for the past few years. I've seen,
Oh,
yeah, and
I'm gonna
also
have a look now.
Cocoa Black does it as well. And as we know, that the more affordable range are Kit Kat. Kit Kat has
Oh.
this rabbit shape chocolates that's been selling everywhere in supermarkets.
Oh, really? I haven't seen them.
Yeah. So I feel like it's kind of like what whitewashing overtaking Lunar New Year sweets, which made me think about the traditional sweets that we had, or at least I had when I was growing up in Taiwan. I mean, the reason of eating something sweet during the Lunar New Year for Taiwanese culture is because sweetness is associated with prosperity, and eating sweets physically makes you feel good, obviously. And also, there's a say in Chinese, apologies in ahead because I'm gonna butcher this
No,
Taiwanese.
I love Taiwanese. Go.
It's Jia Ding Di Ho Li Ho Li He Wen Go Chu Bi. Like, eat sweets and may bring you good fortunes and relationships surrounding your households.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So people believe that eating sweets will result you speaking better, sweetly. You talk sweetly. Yeah, better in communications, I guess. Yeah. So some Taiwanese sweets from my own childhood memory for new Lunar New Year includes like candy and watermelon. It's like a dry fruit, the dry winter melon, coated with sugar.
Is
Sugar
it
almond, yes.
stuffed?
Yeah, it's soft. It's almost like
Oh,
a
like a
gummy
gummy?
texture. Yeah.
Oh, yum. And is it individually wrapped?
Some of them are individual wraps, some of them you just in a huge pack. Yeah, there's sugar almond, candy peanuts.
Candy peanuts are the best.
Yeah,
I
the
swear,
Taiwanese
Chinese
candy
people
peanuts
know
is the
how
best.
to fucking do nuts and
Yeah.
candy. Sesame, peanut. Yeah, we know how to
Anything
do
with
nuts.
nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we have the almond cookies as well. There's a walnut slice. I don't know if
Walnut
you
slice.
remember. It's almost like a jelly texture, a bit more harder than jelly texture, but it's got walnut in it.
Oh, yum.
Obviously, different types of gui, the rice flour, rice cakes. Yeah, rice cake, gui. Depending on where you're from, every region of Asia has something that is made with rice powder and spin it
Oh,
into a
so good.
rice cake. One particular Lunar New Year snack that I want to mention today is Ma Lao
What's
or
that?
Mi Lao. I don't know if you remember, it's like a Rice Krispie or Sesame Krispie. That's how it's been translated in English. I do believe that this is like a Taiwanese traditional sweet that is from Fujian. So the how they make it is that with taro powder and rice powder, you mix it together with water into a dough, and once the dough is fermented, you cut it into small pieces, deep fry it first into like a honeycomb shape pieces. Then those pieces are coated with malt sugar syrup, and then finally coat with the grounded sesame or peanuts. So inside is like crispy, and outside you have this sugar syrup with
Oh my God.
puff rice or peanut powder.
Oh my phone, that sounds so fucking, I'm just like drooling.
So you have the do you remember the sesame balls that you have in Yamcha? Yeah, it's similar to that. So it's like deep fry and you coat it with sugar
Sugar.
and yeah.
Also powdered peanut.
Nuts,
Best thing ever.
yeah, they're great.
I can inhale that thing.
Yeah, just through your nose. Yeah.
What I remember is something I still like, Chi-Chi Chocolate.
Oh yeah, the nougat with coated with
Chocolate,
chocolate.
yeah, chocolate, yeah.
Yeah. Nougats in Taiwan is really
Oh,
good as
big.
well. Yeah, nougats in Taiwan is very big, and I think it's somehow it just tastes different. The
It
Australian one
does.
and
I don't
Taiwan
like
one.
European nougat.
Yeah, it's
I
just
don't like kind of
hard.
nougat you get in Australia. And
Yeah.
speaking of nougat, one of my favorite people in the world, Billy, we had a discussion a few weeks ago where he was like, because he really likes talking about desserts as well, and he was like, does anyone actually really like nougat? And I was like, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think anyone actually really likes nougat.
They'll have to try the
But
Taiwanese one.
yeah, and I
I'll
have
bring
a,
some. I'll bring some back when
well,
I.
actually, I have a whole packet, like
Oh,
little
do
tiny little ones, which
you?
I
Okay,
haven't
yeah.
eaten. But I will make sure to give it to Billy because I actually
Yeah.
forgot that it's actually nougat because it doesn't taste
Yeah.
like nougat. It's
You
just
always
like
think it's
soft and
chocolate.
chewy.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you always think it's chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the end of our episode. That's it from us this week.
Yeah.
Remember.
Have a great Lunar New Year, everyone. Make sure send us your pictures from your celebrations. We'd love to see them.
Yeah,
We'll
yes.
be posting something from our own family.
Yeah, that's it for feast. We all
Yeah.
have. Yeah, so remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google, and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. So that's it from us this week,
Happy
and
Lunar New Year, guys.
have a safe week and a prosperity
Prosperous
or prosperous.
bunny year.
Yes, that's right.